In the Warren County Radio Bible School today, we're going to have a lesson about demons. At least part of this lesson is going to be about demons. It comes from the text of Mark chapter 1, verses 21 through 28, where Jesus rebuked a demon, said, "Hold thy peace and come out of him." And it's called an unclean spirit here. Mark 1 and verse 26. "The unclean spirit, tearing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him." What was this unclean spirit, and what are these demons that we read about in the New Testament? Well, we cannot answer all of the questions, but there's some things we can know. And we'll turn to that by studying Elam's notes in a Sunday school lesson he prepared for the Sundays of January the 8th, 1928. But first, the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Benlop, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. Now, what is this we read about demons? The unclean spirit Jesus cast out of that man in Mark chapter 1 while they were in the synagogue was a demon who possessed the unfortunate man. This was not simply a mental or physical disorder. Evil spirits or demons took possession of human beings and then controlled their actions and their speech and affected their bodies. Of this fact is offered the following proof. They had supernatural strength. The mind is not the only source of blindness. Insanity cannot divine. Demons knew Jesus. Jesus addressed the demons. Demonics confessed his control over them. The 70 asserted it. Jesus admitted it. Peter assures us of it. Out of Mary Magdalene, Jesus cast out 7 demons and a legion out of some. Besides this, demons cast out of a person sought the body of hogs and entered into them. J.W. McGarvey, in his commentary on Acts 8 and verse 16, says that demons, in the Jewish use of the term, is applied exclusively to the departed spirits of wicked men, and that this use was adopted by Jesus and the apostles, and consequently all that is said in the New Testament agrees with it. We know demons were evil spirits of some kind. Sin prepared people for the possession of demons as purity and righteousness prepare one's heart for the Spirit of God. When God worked miracles, it seems that he allowed Satan to do the same to some extent. He did that with the magicians when they confronted Moses before Pharaoh. But God always showed his superiority and power over Satan. Remember, Aaron's rod swallowed the others, and Satan could not perform all the miracles which God did. So in Christ's day, his power over Satan was demonstrated when he cast out demons. In this passage, Christ is represented as binding Satan and spoiling his house by casting out demons. The evil spirit cried with a loud voice, Luke 4:33, while Jesus was teaching. The teaching of Jesus must have aroused this demon. He said, as in the Authorized Version, "Let us alone," that is, "do not trouble us. Art thou come to destroy us?" The demons realized that the mission of Jesus was to destroy the works of the devil. 1 John 3 and verse 8. And this is an admission that he will succeed. Wicked men, now bent on evil, say, "Let us alone, do not disturb our business." Jesus rebuked him and commanded him to come out of the man and would not allow him to confess that he was the Holy One of God, because he did not want the testimony of devils. Faith in him must rest upon the testimony of better witnesses. There was no friendly relationship between him and Satan. The Pharisees said, anyhow, that he cast out demons by the power of Satan. Demons knew they were doomed to torment and that Christ would triumph. Demons also believed and shuddered, James 2 and verse 19. Demons, it seemed, do not like to be disembodied. And on leaving a man, this one gave expression of his malignant rage in a loud cry and by convulsing the one he possessed. Luke 4 and verse 35 says, this demon threw the man in the midst of the crowd, but it did not hurt him. At other times, demons left those possessed by them in a prostrate and sometimes dead condition. The authority with which Jesus astonished his audience, but he more greatly amazes them now by casting out this demon. Thus he confirms his authority. This is a new thing. It was a natural consequence that the demonstration of such power would immediately spread all over the country. Hence, his fame spread abroad. The next miracle we read about is when Jesus heals Peter's mother-in-law. We find it at Mark chapter 1, verses 29, and down to verse 31. It says, straightway, when they were come out of the synagogue, they came to the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's wife's mother lay sick of a fever, and straightway they tell him of her. Verse 31, and he came and took her by the hand and raised her up, and the fever left her, and she ministered unto them. It was from the synagogue Jesus and his disciples went at once into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. You can go to Capernaum today and stand where they think that old synagogue was. There was another synagogue built on top of it, but they've dug down to where that, in portions of that, to expose some of the wall of the synagogue where they think Jesus was. And it's almost across the street from that synagogue where they have found a place that they now identify as Peter's house. And so it was very close to the synagogue. And so from the synagogue, Jesus and his disciples went out at once into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Andrew and Peter were of Bethsaida, and their house was in Capernaum. Hence, we conclude that Bethsaida was either a suburb of Capernaum, or these men had removed from one place to the other since they first met Jesus. Unlike his so-called successors, the popes of Rome, Peter was a married man, kept house, and his mother-in-law and brother Andrew lived with him. His mother-in-law was sick in bed with a great fever. By a gentle touch of Jesus' hand, the fever left her immediately, and she arose and ministered unto them, that is, she served them. No one could doubt that this was a miracle. While in mercy, Jesus relieved suffering humanity miraculously, yet his miracles were to confirm the truth and to convince the world that he was the Son of God. Now there were other miracles. It says in Mark chapter 1, verses 32 through 34, and at even when the sun did set, they brought unto him all that were sick, and them that were possessed with demons, and all the city was gathered at the door. And he healed many that were sick with divers diseases, and cast out many demons, and he suffered not the demons to speak, because they knew him. This was the Sabbath. But at sundown the day ended, and hence after sunset they could bear burdens and go at their general work. So after sunset on this day, all the city, comparatively speaking, was gathered at the door of the house where Jesus was, having brought unto him all that were sick and them that were possessed with demons. that I might have come after sunset too, because it was cool. From what they had seen and heard, they believed Jesus could heal them all. He healed many that were sick with divers diseases, not that he left any unhealed, but there were many, and he healed them all, and cast out many demons with a word. But as before stated, he suffered not the demons to speak, because they knew him and his power. This was a fulfillment of the prophecy of Isaiah, who said, "Himself took our infirmities and bare our diseases." Now that's the end of that Sunday school lesson, but there's this little rhyme right at the very end. My Father, on life's darksome way, may thy word guide me day by day. Help me to take all thou hast given, the light, the toil, the love, the heaven. On the opening page of this little old Sunday school book, I see there's another Sunday school lesson. This prepared for the Sunday schools of January the 15th, 1928. And the title of it is Jesus and Sinners. The lesson text is Mark chapter 2, verse 3 through 12, and then verses 15 through 17. And they come bringing unto him a man sick of palsy, born of four. And when they could not come nigh unto him for the crowd, they uncovered the roof where he was. And when they had broken it up, they let down the bed whereon the sick of palsy lay. And Jesus, seeing their faith, said unto the sick of the palsy, "Son, thy sins are forgiven." But there were certain of the scribes sitting there, and reasoning in their hearts, "Why doth this man thus speak? He blasphemeth. Who can forgive sins but one, even God?" And straightway Jesus, perceiving in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, said unto them, "Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Which is easier to say? To say to the sick of the palsy, 'Thy sins are forgiven,' or to say, 'Arise and take up thy bed and walk'? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath authority on earth to forgive sins," he said to the sick of the palsy, "I say unto thee, arise, take up thy bed, and go into thy house." And he arose, and straightway took up the bed, and went forth before them all, inasmuch as they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, "We never saw it on this fashion." And it came to pass that he was sitting at meat in his house, and many publicans and sinners sat down with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many, and they followed him. And the scribes of the Pharisees, when they saw that he was eating with the sinners and publicans, said to his disciples, "How is it that he eateth and drinketh with publicans and sinners?" And when Jesus heard it, he said unto them, "They that are whole have no need of a physician, but they that are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." Now that's the golden text. Mark chapter 2 and verse 17. "I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." The devotional reading is the 32nd Psalm. I'll begin reading that, and we'll cease reading this when we go out of time. It is a psalm of David, a miscall. That is in the inscription to this psalm. Miscall sometimes is thought to mean a psalm of instruction. It's an untranslated word in our Bibles, untranslated because it's so old that they're not sure of the meaning, but it's usually thought to be of a psalm of instruction. Here's how the psalm begins, and I'll read it again when we return, but it says, "Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man unto whom Jehovah imputeth not iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no guile." I'll simply say this, those verses are quoted to us in the book of Romans, chapter 4.